You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report podcast. Do not adjust your dials. If the voice does not sound like Brian Phillips, that's because this is not Brian Phillips. This is Patrick Murphy. Brian's not here. Bart's not here. I'm here. Sam's here. And then we have with Thomas Costello, who, Thomas, you were already on one of these this year, right?
Yeah, I was really happy that the fans wanted me back for another episode.
Yeah. And then a familiar face, a blast from sort of the past, Ori Benatar, who spent the last 2 years with us, but has moved on to bigger and better things, but
he
agreed to come out and talk some crew with us tonight.
Abandoned us is the word.
Yeah,
for greener pastures.
I was here for the last two seasons. This is not a replay from 2021 or 2020. It's an in-person podcast. I'm a guest this time. I'm not going to have the scoops on Caleb. That's all Thomas now. He's doing a great job, by the way.
Oh, worries.
But it's nice to see you guys again.
Yeah, you too. I told Sam before we started that we would just... that you were a guest and you would speak when spoken to. So anyway, we're here at Saucy Brew Works, where we like to do this at the corner of 3rd and Michigan. I'm not going to read your...
You dropped my tag?
Yes, we definitely
are
did.
You kidding
me? Thanks for listening, Ori.
That was the best thing I did.
Do you still remember it?
Saucy Brew Works. If you're Brew Works, then why not be saucy with
There
me?
You go.
All right, you can get that one in. We're talking Columbus Crew, of course.
Wait, is this what this is about?
Yeah, we're not just here to watch you eat food and Thomas drink coffee and me drink beer and Ori not do anything. We're talking about the crew, and it's another win for the crew. That's the second already in three games this year. 2-0-1. They are top of the Supporters Shield standings, for whatever that means, three games into the season. Second most goals scored in the league. It's been a good start, and we're going to recap that game. We're going to kind of give our thoughts on that and kind of just talk around that game and eventually get to what's coming up with the New York Red Bulls. So, guys, to start about with this game, I think it kind of broke down to a game of sort of two halves, maybe like 30, 35 minutes, and then the end of the first half. But we'll start with the first half. Thomas, you were there covering it for us, so why don't you start, and we'll just all kind of give our thoughts. What did you make of the first half specifically, and then we'll get in the second half later.
The first 30 minutes was, I think, the first time the Crew's defense, not including set pieces, has had to do a lot of work. This is the first time where Aloy Room has had to do any work in the run of play. It was different. After the match, even Coach Porter, he was saying how Toronto came out with a completely different formation than what they were expecting, and you could tell because they looked like they were being overrun. They looked confused from the get-go.
Yeah, I was in the snore deck for this game, and I missed kickoff by like a couple minutes, and so I got there and just kind of getting my bearings, and I was like, what is Toronto doing here that's confusing them? And then somebody pointed out to me, like, I think Michael Bradley's playing center back, and I was like, okay, well, that's definitely different. And so then it started to kind of click, and I was able to get on Twitter and see that things were a little different.
Hold on. I thought he's been playing defense all year, no?
No, he was the first two games, he was his normal holding mid spot. Now, he does drop back into the center back, so, like what Will used to do. But, it was definitely more apparent that he was playing further back.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I thought he had been playing center back.
In past seasons,
all year.
I think.
He's started a few
at the position, but not regularly.
It's not the dumbest thing to stick him there at center back, because Toronto was coming off, a 4-1 loss to the Red Bulls?
Yeah.
Get some leadership in defense there, and I'm sure they were probably told, hey, you guys have to start this game fast. We've had a bad start to the season. We had a terrible loss at home. Let's get out there and get off to a quick start, even with a 3-back.
Oh, go ahead.
Right, and just so we're clear, we're not talking about the booing on this podcast, right? Because I've seen enough about it on
Twitter.
That
was not in our rundown.
Okay, good. So
if you want to talk about
it. I don't want to talk about it.
I have lots to say on the topic.
Michael Bradley got booed, and that's it. No.
Salcedo was out. He had a retroactive red card.
Right.
He had a yellow against New York Red Bulls, Red Bull New York, and it turned into a red card eventually. So Salcedo was out. Mavinga... Porter kind of expected him to come back. He was out. He was not in any of the roster. He was not available as a sub. So when Bradley came out, I think that the press of the Crew, who was throwing a couple guys forward, they didn't have that, you know, two on two they were hoping for, and they had to adjust. But on the booing,
if you want to do this, we can go ahead.
I really don't mind. Like, I'm not. Of course, I'm sitting in the media area. I'm not booing. I'm not doing anything. Like that. But
I hope you're not booing.
If I was in the stands, I would probably be doing it just because sports are supposed to be fun, and I think people have a fun time when they get to have a common enemy, albeit from what, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah. I will say this, and if I'm sure most of the people listening to this have seen what I've said about this whole thing, though most people seem to miss a lot of my point. But anyway, we don't need to rehash that. It's all on Twitter from over the weekend.
Yeah, just read it on Twitter.
I did think that the booing, I don't know if it was the booing, but I thought that was as good of a game as I've seen Bradley play.
Oh, he's
in
fantastic.
Quite some time.
He played really well.
His defense was great. He was stopping, like, Barry was frustrated all game. He looked like, he looked kind of like a shell of what we've seen from him in the latter parts of last season and the beginning of this season.
To be fair, I feel that the Crew players played a good part in making Michael Bradley look like he played a good game on defense. Because, by golly, the amount of times that they tried to either five-hole him or kick the ball, like try to pass the ball through him or directly to his feet was incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. And it happened a lot. Had they gone, like, left of him or right of him, mm-hmm. they actually could have scored, like, four or five more goals.
And that's something that's kind of interesting because, you know, now that I'm not covering the team, I'm kind of watching games from a little bit of a different perspective. And I still remember those times in 2020 and 2021. Every time the Crew played a good game, Caleb would always tell us we could have scored three or four. This time around, I mean, in that first half, it wasn't really totally true because the Crew have played six halves this season. To me, that's probably their only bad half of the season. You know, the last 6 minutes against San Jose was bad, but hey, they scored two goals in that half. It was a productive half. Yeah. But the first half against Toronto was probably the only time the Crew looked a little bit stale offensively. Defensively, things weren't really cohesive, and Toronto really dominated the half. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But offensively, though, for the Crew, this is the times around where Caleb Porter, you know, he'll say, we should have scored three or four, and they're doing that. Yeah. And we'll get to the goals in a minute, but I feel like now it's like we got to transition to Toronto's goal because Crew have conceded three times, all on set pieces.
Well, yeah, but before we do that, you talked about the formation, Thomas. And Caleb said after the game, they, you know, started defending in a 4-4-2 block. They switched that to a 4-2-3-1 to better be able to kind of press and, you know, break out when they're defending. You and I were talking today about the mentality of this team, mm-hmm. and the fact that, you know, last week, yes, they gave up two late goals, but they also came from behind on the road to take a 3-1 lead.
Yeah.
They could have allowed that situation in San Jose to affect them this week. Okay, well, we've kind of given up a lead. Now we're coming back home. You know, Toronto needs points, that type of thing. And they did a little bit based on what happened. Toronto comes out looking different. And then they're still able to kind of keep control of things, get control back of the game, but keep control mentally, I guess is what I mean.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously you get the goals in the second half. So, you know, if that's the bad half, and I think that's kind of what you're saying, Rory. Like, if that's their worst half of soccer, you know, it's a long season, so we'll see.
They'll play plenty of more bad halves. It's MLS. You know, Cincinnati beat Orlando at Orlando this week. Mm-hmm. Austin didn't score five goals. You know, anything can happen in this league.
Well, yeah. No, I completely agree with you. And they had their chances on the first half. It's not like they were completely stifled. They didn't look the same in the first 30 minutes, but they still had chances. It just looked like their passing was just a little bit off. They came out, like you mentioned, the mentality. They came out motivated because you're going to be a little pissed off after you lose the match at the last few minutes. But I would say it's even more impressive that Toronto came out and kind of controlled the game and Columbus still fought through it. And also, this might not mean anything at all. Pre-match, looking at the cold, people were chilly. But comparing the Crew to Toronto, Aiden Morris was the one player not wearing long pants. And Toronto had about eight or nine guys. I'm not saying that there's like some mentality in your mind of, okay, a little chilly start, a little cold start. But it looked to be impacting one team over the other. I'll just say that.
Well, and they, I mean, as far as I know, they practiced outside all last week. So, like, it wasn't like they were
but
not
on
used
Friday,
to.
It was like in the
right,
50s.
And, sure. And I can tell you, now that I'm at NBC, I see the weather forecast at least 50 times a day when I'm at work. So I could tell you what the weather was like a month ago, 3 days ago. This in the lead up to the game, it was mild, spring-like temperatures. Things were nice. And then Saturday, just this huge cold front just smacked into Columbus. And mm-hmm. you've got those single-digit wind chills, which Crew don't play games in that kind of a wind chill often. And you would think that they would play maybe one or two early season because of the fact that they started in late February. But the fact that the opener in February against Vancouver was warmer than the Toronto game, it just tells you Midwest weather.
I actually didn't think it was that. Like I said, we were sitting in the Nordec. We were down close to the field, so like maybe we're a little more packed in, but I didn't think it was too bad. Now, the sun, too, was coming through for most of the game directly on us, so maybe if you're in the...
Yeah, when the sun was out, it actually wasn't that bad.
It
was tolerable.
The sun will help that.
The sun went away, and then you get this wind whipping.
The wind.
Yeah.
Oh.
Where we were,
the wind's been bad,
where
yeah.
We were.
Were you in the south end?
Really? Well, we did both ends because we switched
half.
Oh,
you switched half, that's right.
And it was really cold, and like to the point where like you, like when we went in, Ralph and I went in for halftime, and our fingers were like just needles because it was that cold. And then the second half was a little bit better, but still, it was just...
And I imagine it was probably just as bad for the players because, like you mentioned with Nordeca, you're packed in. You have that friction from all the people around you. You're all wearing, you know, you're relatively layered, so you'll get that heat.
Maybe some liquid layers as well.
liquid, there you go.
Shout out to Sam and Ralph, by the way. Great photos and not great conditions. So shout out anytime it's out horrible. I did photography once last season in horrible weather, and I will respect what you gentlemen do every single week.
Photogs,
we
they're the best. But, you know, photogs and players out on the field, they're isolated in those conditions. They don't have that warmth around them, and the wind's howling when you're trying to pass a ball. I mean, we've all played soccer in bad conditions. It's not fun.
I will say that that is a heated field, so it does help the players a little. You know, it's still cold, don't get me wrong, but you're not playing like we would play on a, you know, grass field in the middle of a park where it's solid. And
or you play on dirt with hail coming down. You know, we've done it all here. It's Ohio.
Well, or you touched on it a little bit earlier, but the set piece goal.
Oh, my God.
They've given up three this year. They've all come from set pieces. This one was...
This is a secondary. So
yeah,
it
was.
The initial set piece cross.
But to me, you still have to count it as a set piece goal conceded.
Sure.
Because it's right, it's like two passes after the initial free kick.
Right.
And the positioning of the defenders is still within a set piece positioning.
Right. Well, and I went back and looked at it today. So Miguel Berry gets his head on it. It doesn't get very far. Toronto gets there first. Crew players, actually, I thought did a good job to kind of close down. I forget who it was for.
Moreira. Steve Moreira, he was the one moving the most of anybody.
Yeah.
And that's
But the problem was it went wide and then came back into the middle. And three or four Crew players had just watched. I mean,
there's
going
a lot
back,
of ball watching.
Yeah, going back and watching the replay from where they are when Berry heads the ball to where they are when the cross comes back in. There was very little movement. And Jimenez, I think it was, who got the goal.
Right.
You know, he barely had to jump. And that comes over Milos. It comes over Artur. And Nagby, you could even argue Nagby should have been tighter.
He was on the line, he was right on the post, too.
Right, and Deganek needs to mark him and as their get goal side of him, but he was caught ball-watching in that situation. And even so, you think about set-piece defending in general, it's sort of a moment where your concentration can be a little bit lost because you're out of the momentum of the flow of the game. So it sort of resets when a set-piece happens. Mm-hmm. But that's when you need to be at your most, you know, vigilant when you're defending because, hey, if you're not standing goal side of a guy, he can just get open, and sometimes you can just sort of waywardly reposition yourself to get back into playing mode in a sense.
Yeah.
I think one thing that you guys said multiple times, and I noticed on the field, is that there was a lot of ball watching, especially in that first half.
Right.
Like, you lose the ball, and then it's going past you, and they're just standing there looking at it like, what do I do now? And that was worrisome in the first half because you're like, Toronto, sure, they got shellacked the week before by New York, but they also don't like Columbus. So they can come back and have this comeback, and you're like, if this is how the rest of the game is going to go, this is going to be really bad because of that ball watching, because of that, like you said, they just looked lost. So the fact that they were able to kind of switch that in the second half was really, really big. But it pretty much led, like, that culminated directly into that goal. It got a little bit better after the goal, but not. It was still very worrisome.
There was still the chance that Rue made the save in the first half, that they got behind the defense. I thought Thomas and I were discussing this earlier. We decided to save our debate for the podcast. I thought that was the game was really poor by Milos. Like, and I thought he was okay last week. Obviously, 2 weeks ago, they get the shutout. He doesn't have to do much. Now, this is a guy coming to a new league. He's already played a lot this year, so I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. We saw what it took Jonathan Mensah almost a year to really settle into this league and kind of the pace of play, the physicality, the travel, all that's, you know, you wrote about that, Thomas.
Yeah.
But I just haven't been overly impressed. I thought the ball watching was a lot on him a few times, not just on the goal. Mm-hmm. I need to see him kind of take control a bit more of his responsibilities. Not necessarily, you know, Jonathan's the captain. He's going to be the vocal guy, especially not for a new guy. Josh Williams, we know when he gets back in there, he'll do Josh Williams things, but he's still not fully healthy. But I don't know. I just – it obviously hasn't hurt them.
No.
Yet, but
I just don't think Milos has gotten a true defensive test yet. You need to have a game to really see what he's made of and what the defense is made of, where their opponent is just pummeling them with shots, pummeling them with chances, pummeling them with counterattacks. They haven't had that in those first three games. Now, maybe the Red Bulls, maybe this is the game where the defense gets tested a little bit more on the road against a team that's playing well, presses high. Mm-hmm. So, but
I mean, after the first match, Porter, unprompted to, or just asking kind of how the new guys played, and he kind of went on a tangent about how well he thought Milos played and how he's not doing, like, slide tackles, and he's not running people down, right. But he's still in the right place at the right time. Take the set pieces away. Even take the penalty away. I'm sure there was a lot of debate last week about that being a penalty or not. He fouled him. But outside of that, and outside of these set pieces, which you can blame Milos on that goal for Toronto because he was in the area, but for the fourth time, ball watching, the rest of the guys look bumfuzzled in the penalty area, just kind of watching him like, oh, he's going to get it? I don't completely take it out on Milos, but I think there is an adjustment. His adjustment looks a lot better than Mensah's adjustment when Mensah came in.
I think we found our word of the day. Bumfuzzled, is that what you said, Thomas?
Yeah, they look.
I've never heard that word before.
Oh, well.
It's going to be added surprises to the new Massive Report line of t-shirts.
You need to you have to make sure you title the podcast episode
Bumfuzzled.
The crew de-bumfuzzled themselves to come back against Toronto.
Like,
thank you.
He added the,
if you get a text from me later, it's probably because I forgot what we were going to call this podcast.
Okay.
But I still think there's three matches is not going to spell the end. I mean, because again, you mentioned it, Mensah. He got a red card in his first couple matches with the crew. Supporters were actively calling for him to, like, why is he on the team? And then he won newcomer of the year. Now he's the captain. And he lifted MLS Cup. So it's not...
And should have won MLS Defender of the Year in 2020, if we're being honest with ourselves.
I will say that Milos, at least in his first three games, still seems more comfortable than
Vito?
Vito.
Yeah.
I was about to ask you guys about that.
Well, like, the one thing with Vito, though, is just, like, I don't know what he would have been if he doesn't get hurt. Because I thought in that first... And this is a big tangent we don't necessarily need to really go down. But I did think that game against the game against New York at home before they go out to Seattle, and he obviously gets the card at the end, but I thought he played pretty well, and you saw, like, what he could have been, and then we just never – I don't know.
But he played against 10 men for 86 minutes in that game.
But he threw himself into tackles. But
that's true.
If you're in situations like – if you're a good defender, do you always have to throw yourself in the tackles, or are you in good positions to not have to do it? And I think that's what Milos is
doing. I don't remember which defender said this, or someone said it about Paolo Maldini. You never see him making a slide tackle because he's that good of a defender, because he never needs to recover to make a slide tackle.
Well, and it also helps who's around you and think, you know, like, sometimes you have to make tackles just because somebody else, you know, is out of position.
But he's only been with the team since the second match of the challenge or the Carolina Challenge Cup. So he's still had a month with the team.
Like, I'm not out on him. I just have not been overly impressed thus far, and I'm certainly willing to be proven wrong on this. But you know, and especially this was my first time seeing him in person because I was not at the game 2 weeks ago. So you know, maybe it just wasn't the best performance. And you know, obviously, you hope that Josh Williams comes back, you get some real competition there. Obviously, they have Anibaba too, who I don't know what all he'll add this year, but he's already come in one game, and I imagine they'll use him in rotation. But you'd hope you'd 3-4 center backs that you trust would be good for this team.
And that's kind of something that's going to be interesting there during this year. I don't know if you guys discussed this in the season preview stuff or anything, but the fact that the Crew doesn't have a jam-packed schedule, most of the time they're playing once a week, you feel like injuries are not going to be a big issue, and that starting lineup is probably going to be the same every week. Mm-hmm. So rotation might not be really as necessary. So how many times are we going to see a fourth-string guy play this season, assuming the Crew continue to stay healthy with a less congested schedule? Like, I mean, look at what 2020 and 2021 were in terms of a schedule. They were playing sometimes every 4 days for 3 weeks.
Yeah. I think with Josh coming back healthy, you might see some rotation just because of what you mentioned, Pat. Milos is coming off of a European calendar. He's doing a lot of traveling with Australia, trying to get them qualified for the World Cup. And right after the season, he's hoping to play in a World Cup. So I think with Porter knowing that and knowing that you have somebody like a Williams or Ani Baba on the bench, that you could give Milos a little bit of time off just so you have, you know, solid legs for if you make the playoffs.
You're also probably Milos. I don't know if he'll be available for Sunday, but I feel like he won't be available for next week because World Cup qualifying is coming up. And Australia have some big games in Asia to try and get a top two spot and get an automatic berth to Qatar.
International break next weekend.
Right, so he's probably gone, for at least a game or two in this at the end of March.
I imagine with the travel and stuff, he will miss time. And one thing, you know, we talked about it last week, but I know not everyone listens, and obviously neither of you were here. But to me, Josh Williams just brings something different from I care so much about this team. You know, it's like we were talking about last week with, you know, you give up the second goal to San Jose. Josh Williams is the type of guy that grabs a team, maybe not literally grabs, but, you know, huddles the guys together and is like, we're not giving up an effing next goal, you know? And that's something I feel like they miss when he's not on the field. And maybe, you know, Jonathan and at this point in Josh's career, Milos and some other guys are better athletes, better, you know, have more legs left in them, especially coming off an injury. But Josh just has this, you know, he's not the captain, but he's got this it factor that he doesn't let this team lose. And I thought that was huge in the 2020 run, you know, having him back there. It's like, you know, this was his shot to do something with more or less his hometown team. And so I think they do miss that a little bit. Just, you know, it's like Will used to do the same stuff. Like he was the type of guy that would you know, grab it.
And Milos is new. So he's been a cat. Australia, he captains Australia. For Red Star, he's a leader on the team before he came to Columbus. It might just be taking time to maybe find your voice playing alongside the team captain and coming into a team that has some pretty good chemistry. But
I think a lot of times Josh Williams is kind of like Gino Padula, where Gino in 08 and 09, he's like, I knew that my speed wasn't there anymore. Maybe my athleticism wasn't there anymore. But I got smarter on how to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made him so effective in shutting down, like, David Beckham when he was tearing up the league and shutting down other, you know, forwards in the league. Which, Murph is wearing a old school.
Highlight where David Beckham scores from midfield against Wimbledon in 1997. That's the jersey that Pat's wearing. It's the classic United kit.
Is the Beckham one on the back?
The one Eric Cantona was wearing when he kicked a fan in the chest. So
I actually think that was a little before that, but they're very similar.
Same sponsor.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's Sharp.
But let's. Quite literally, the sponsor is
That's
Sharp.
The sponsor is not complimenting his kit choice.
Second half was Sharp, though, for the Crew.
Yeah, such a pro.
Oh, I'm back, baby.
Such a pro.
All right, let's move on to the second half. Thomas, again, I'm going to ask you first. Mm-hmm. Just what did you see? Because I know Caleb talked about changes. What did you see from kind of the press box view? What was better to open that second half for the Crew?
I think the midfield was a lot better. Toronto was going down the wings. I think they were especially going towards Pedro's side of the field, which, considering all the pressure he had, and I wrote about this in the game grades, I thought Pedro did a good job. I think that there were people who were hard on Pedro after the match because of how much maybe people got past him, especially Nelson, who he was going head-to-head against in the match. But there was a lot of pressure down the wings. I think the midfield finally opened up. I think they brought Zelarayan back. instead of having him charge forward, move him back a little bit so we had more space in the midfield.
More room to
around.
Run when you're going to shoot the ball.
Exactly. That was the example I was going to segue into. He has that perfect chance. But today we had an article in Master Report about Aloy Room, and he had a huge save in that beginning of the second half because Toronto, they still were able to break through the defense a little bit. It wasn't like the first half, but they had a really solid chance in the second half that Room kept him out. But for Crew's side, I think the midfield got a lot stronger. And, I think also bringing in Luis Diaz was a huge change.
That's about as good as Luis Diaz has played in some time. I know he scored in the first game, but he misses the chance that, you hope that
which
he
is
scores.
What everybody remembers is that he'll miss the chance.
Right. And the Giassi
chance. He changed
chance.
The game.
Right.
He changed the game.
That's a game where they should have scored 5 goals in the second half. There's 2 chances need to be buried.
I will say, Pedro had to play a lot more defense than he normally does because there is a lot of attack going down that right side of the field. So he was kept very busy. And when he did come forward, he just passed it. He didn't really do much. He didn't overlap. He didn't cut in like he normally does. He didn't even try to take a shot, which is pretty rare for Pedro.
He had the one from long distance shortly after Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
He had a hell of a pass.
He has at least one.
to Yeboah.
He has a quota. He's got to get at least one long-range shot in every game.
Yeah, and he also, on the Zellerian goal, and we can talk about him in a second, but the ball comes out to him, and obviously Lucas is going to shoot. You could see that as he ran up to it. But Pedro had been coming closer to Lucas and pulls out, and I think that caught the defender out of the corner of his eye a little bit. Hard to tell from just watching it on the replay, but you know Pedro's out there. You have to be aware in case he decides to just play that quick pass out, and I think that may have helped out a little bit. So, just smart from him to get wide when he did get forward.
Yeah. There wasn't as much room to your point, Sam, about Pedro. It was a very direct game on both ends of both sidelines. I think Moreira, too, played a very direct game. You didn't see him drifting in the middle. And you
but
didn't
Moreira,
see Toronto going after Moreira either.
But Moreira did have the cross that led to led to Derek's goal?
No, it was
to Zellerian's
goal. It went to Derek, who was a little behind him, and he toe-tapped it back. I don't even know if he knew Zellerian was
there.
I thought
the defender might have hit it. I thought it was just two guys going for the ball and somebody tapped.
They gave Etienne the assist.
Which
it looked like he got the assist.
Yeah. Yeah. But down the wings, it wasn't as... They weren't joining Lucas like they were in past weeks. They weren't joining in the creation of the offense as much as they did, but also Toronto. San Jose and Vancouver are not the most difficult teams in the league.
Neither is Toronto, I would say. More difficult than those two.
More difficult than those two,
Well, and I mentioned this today, it was their first Eastern Conference game. You're playing an opponent that knows you. I mean, granted, the schedule's been weird the last couple of years, but... this is a team that you play fairly regularly as opposed to San Jose and Vancouver, who they haven't played San Jose in 3 years. And
2019,
And Vancouver.
Vancouver in 3 years.
Yeah. So, obviously coaches are watching other teams and you scout plenty, but just, something to think of. Mm-hmm. The Zellerian goal, just Zellerian in general. I mean, we should just have a segment each week on the podcast where we're going to talk about what Lucas did this week.
We should put a prop bet. When will the first week be that Lucas doesn't make Team of the Week? Because he's made it every week.
Yeah.
He's the MVP front runner in the league. He's scored 4 goals in 3 games.
You had a nice stat today.
What was your stat?
Well, share this last week, and I just updated for this week because it's getting hard to write Lucas Team of the Week articles because he gets them every week.
Yeah.
In 20 matches with the Crew where he has scored a goal, or assisted, the Crew have won 14 of them, and they've gotten 3 draws. They've only lost 2 matches where Lucas has gotten an assist or a goal. And also, he's outscored...
This is the one I was talking about.
Oh, there's
the
second one. He's outscored 14 teams so far this season with his 4 goals.
Yeah, that's...
14 teams.
That's a pretty good start.
I don't know if that says really more about him or about some of the bad teams in MLS.
It's a bit of both. Well, and also,
you need goals to win.
75% of his goals this season are from outside the box.
Yeah.
It's hard to score 3 outside the box goals in your first 3 games of a season in any league. Name me any other player that's done that.
And only one of them was a free kick.
Right.
No? Two of them are from
open play.
What was the one in the box? I'm trying.
That was the 87th minute.
Fourth
in the home
goal
opener.
Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Where he dribbled through three players.
Right. And left-footed one near post.
Falling back.
But I said it on Twitter. I said it last year even. Lucas Villarreal is the most talented player to wear a Crew shirt. If he wins an MVP for this team, I think he's the best player in Crew history. No question.
People are already saying that. People are already saying he's better.
There's
than.
A legitimate argument for that. I
feel that he's already cemented that you're going to make it to the Circle of Honor at some point once you're retired.
He's got a trophy.
He's got a trophy. He's got a MLS MVP or MLS Cup MVP.
Newcomer of the year.
Campeones Cup winner.
Campeones Cup winner.
I don't know if that's in the
it
the
counts.
Criteria.
It's a game. It counts.
How many people's eyes rolled whenever?
It counts for the Crew.
Yeah, they did bring it up a lot after they won it last year.
Yeah.
It's a trophy.
The players seem to care about it, and that's what's important, right? Yeah. But end of last season, it's not even just this season. He had 5 goals and 2 assists in the last 5 matches of last year. And now he has 4 goals and 2 assists in the first
three matches
of this year.
And he
year.
Scored in 6 straight games dating back to last season. That's what Neil Sika yelled out when Zellerion scored again. But that shot, that brought back memories of his first half, end of first half goal against Cincy in Hell is Real last July when Harry got a red a couple minutes before.
Oh, I remember that.
Crew were down 2-0 to Cincy. They conceded in the first 30 seconds of that game.
That was almost Beckham territory. We're talking about it. Yeah. That was far out. Yeah,
he knuckled it. Low drive past, who was the, Vermeer?
I thought it was Teton.
No, Teton wasn't playing that game. I think it was. Oh no, maybe it was Teton. Vermeer played at home and spilled 50 million balls. Mm. But that goal gave the momentum for the Crew to eventually tie that game, and Caleb Porter shushing the Cincy crowd.
The explosion game of one Miguel Berry.
Yeah, that was his first Crew goal. So, but
An assist
by
Lucas Villarreal.
Lucas Villarreal. But being able to shoot a ball like that with that technique, low driven into the low corner like that, that's unbelievable. I think you tweeted out it was like a ground ball.
Yeah,
going down the baseline. It's like he is incredible.
We weren't even playing in New York.
No, that's true. Shout out to someone. I don't know their name. They replied. It would have never made it through the shift, and I really appreciated that reply. That was my favorite.
Never mind.
Tweet of the vet.
Speaking of New York.
Well, we no, take... for before we get... Oh, are you talking about the Red Bulls? Or are you
no, he was going to
talk.
I know what you're going to mention.
I'm not going to that. Okay. Can we marvel for a second
the championship
about their
banner?
Their 2-foot by 3-foot?
Oh, I didn't see this
championship. You didn't?
No.
What?
Okay, oh my goodness!
I will show
so,
you.
For those who
Ori, take it away until I find this.
For those who are listening, if you didn't see, New York City FC played its first quote unquote home game of the season. Well, technically it's a home game. They played at Yankee Stadium against Montreal, and of course they're MLS Cup champions. And they brought out their championship banner, looked like it was printed out at a FedEx kiosk. I don't even know if people go to FedEx anymore. It's a tiny little poster board. It looks like it was, made by
no,
a third grader.
Zip ties.
It is vinyl lettering on a vinyl banner.
Did the
I
fans
know that
do
because
this?
I have made these banners before. No, this was tweeted out from the official
NYCFC
account.
But did the fans make it for
no.
the team?
No.
Nope.
So
I'm
need
surprised
to go,
Yankee Stadium let them have that much.
You need to go
that's a good
on,
point, I guess.
You need to go on the NYCFC Twitter account, open up this tweet, and then read the comments.
Oh, it got ratioed for sure.
Absolutely.
Pull up the QTs.
I mean,
also,
as a Yankee fan, it's nice that there's not a lot of room for an NYCFC banner because all the World Series we've won, but you got to do better than that. Like, that banner was a joke.
All right, well.
Anyway.
A guy
now
who,
that we got that
a
out
guy
of
who
system.
Used to play in New York, Derek Etienne, also on Team of the Week this week.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Lucas is on his own level, but Derek's been fantastic. Goal and assist
truly.
Again this week. I mean, I feel like we're just talking about these two a lot. They've just been very good for the Crew to start
We've
the season.
We've taken a lot of pictures of these two also because
they're celebrating.
I feel like every picture I use in an article is Derek Etienne celebrating a goal.
Right.
Like that's every
That's what it feels like.
You got to love the celebration he did for BWP. The heel click that he did after he scored against Seattle. That was his last professional goal. Derek doing that for BWP or retired.
Which was weird because he scores in the first half and it's offside and he was getting ready to do the gritty and then he like somebody said it was offside. So I don't know if there was like a halftime thing where it was like you were supposed to do the BWP celebration.
He did say in the post match that he was going for the gritty even the second time, but he changed his mind right before he started it. So I think it maybe just hit him in the moment. I don't know if that was part of the quarter's halftime team talk.
I want to pose this question to you guys because this is something that I'm kind of thinking about. At the start of this season, when you're looking at the projected starting 11 for the Crew, you're probably thinking Etienne and Yeboah as your starting wingers. Fair enough. But going into the season, you're thinking Yeboah is probably the safer bet to keep that spot more consistently, right? Well, or would you think Etienne? Because I think Etienne is cemented into that winger spot with how well he's been playing. And Yeboah, maybe, you could put Diaz in there potentially.
I thought the left side was always – I thought it was going to stay a revolving door. I thought Yeboah coming in, it sounded like, no, he is the starting right winger, and that's it. He's taking Pedro's spot, and that's it. I thought the left winger was going to be on a rotation basis, and I was even kind of shocked to see Etienne start in the Challenge Cup in Carolina because Diaz still got most of the starts over Etienne. He still got most of the playing time, and I thought it was still going to be maybe situational, which is what Porter kind of hinted at. But, after that first match, it just feels like Etienne's going to have a really bad game for Porter to change
his
mind.
That's his spot to lose.
Yeah.
Something has happened in the offseason to which his movement off the ball is different. And I don't know if it's other players on the field are seeing him differently than they did before, but being on the left side instead of the right side, his movement is completely different for some reason. Maybe it's being with Pedro on that side that helps a lot.
Yeah.
But it's very, this is not even 2020 Derek Etienne, which was obviously very effective. Or at least effective, but 2021 Derek Etienne was not that.
Yeah.
And then with Diaz, you kind of, when they brought in Yaya Boa, you knew that he was going to be probably the starter. I think what you have on that right side now is literally what happened in this TFC game, where Yaya, if he could have had a couple of breakthroughs and didn't get tackled, he could have probably scored. But then once you kind of worn down that side of the defense, you throw in Luis Diaz. He's just going to burn people.
I mean, Diaz came on. He was literally just 20 yards ahead of anybody who was trying to mark him, and they were just sending long balls to him.
And the only time they could stop him was a really, really strong tackle that tore up, like, half the field.
Well, I think the biggest thing with Etienne is, to me, and he's talked a little bit about, you know, he felt he needed to be more consistent, and he's had good end to seasons, but he needs to start better and things. I wonder if he kind of realized this may be my last shot. You know, he didn't make it with his sort of hometown Red Bulls. He got sent to Cincinnati. That didn't work out.
Wasn't he a homegrown for the Red Bulls?
I don't think he was. Like, he's from that area, but I don't think he was officially a homegrown.
He was 18 when he started.
Right.
Yeah.
But I just wonder if, you know, maybe something was said, like, you know, you've got to get it going, man. You know, how long?
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, he started 18. He's 24 now. Not to say that your career should end that early, but if you can't do it after 6 years with multiple teams on a consistent level, and I think that's been his biggest issue.
And I asked Porter that at the beginning of the season, because in the preseason, I asked him, okay, what about the wingers? How are they reacting to Yeboah coming in? And also, I know this is way down the line, but you still have Kevin Molino on contract. If he comes back healthy, you signed him for a good amount of money last season. Are you going to not play him?
You have also Alex Matan.
Yeah, and
I want to see more Matan. I mean, you guys know I love Matan. I want to see more of him.
Everybody does, because we haven't seen as much of him, so we think, oh, well, that's going to be dynamic.
It's like the backup quarterback.
Yeah, the backup quarterback's the most popular. At that winger position, the backup winger has been the most popular for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
But, no, Etienne is different. But to that point, Porter said they were all taking it professionally, and he told them all they know that you have to play a certain level to make it on the team, and they know that if they don't reach it, you'll see what happens. And Etienne has talked about confidence. I asked him in the preseason what he wanted to do. I want to be more decisive. I want to take more shots. I want to be more.
He's doing that for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely doing that now. So good for him, and I mean good for the Crew, because 9 goals in 3 matches is really good.
Stats-wise, because I posed the question, and Steve Cirque responded to me. He said, only twice has the Crew started a season and scored at least 2 goals in their first 3 games, 2014 and this year.
Mm.
You know, that's something that this team desperately needed to improve on after what 2021 was. 2021 was a Crew team that didn't get off to good starts. They rarely scored the first goal. And offensively, they just didn't have that many games where you're like, wow, this offense is awesome. This year, they've played three times. And you think that this offense could score four or five goals a game because they're more aggressive, they're more confident in taking their shots, and there's a good cohesion, you know. And also, Marrera and Pedro are offering a ton down as the fullbacks. I think because Derek Etienne's more confident, and like you guys said, he needs to have more production this year, maybe to help him keep his career going in MLS. He's doing that for sure. Lucas is on another planet. And then you have Miguel and Jossi up top, two really good options at striker, and plenty of depth to go with it. So,
well, let's take our unnecessary quick break here. And I want to come back to the offense because I think there's quite a bit to talk about there. And we were told coming into the season that this offense, not that it wasn't going to be any good, but that maybe it wasn't going to live up to the top of MLS. And that hasn't been the case. So we'll discuss that in just a minute. And we're back here from Saucy Brewworks here at Michigan and what are we at third? Michigan third. I should know that. I live right by there. I also forgot to mention.
You literally live like a block or two away.
Yeah, it's not far. Don't tell people too close though, because they get mad at me on Twitter. They might show up at my house. But
Pat, why do you not boo Michael Bradley?
I forgot to mention when we started that Brian has become very good at. Please like, subscribe, all of those good things.
Give us good comments.
Yes, that all helps us out tremendously in terms of the algorithms and whatnot. So we do appreciate it. It doesn't take very long. It's a very easy thing to do if you like listening to us ramble about the Crew. And speaking of, Ori, you were doing a really good job right before we went to break of kind of summarizing what this start offensively has been. And I kind of alluded to it. Caleb said before the season that, you know, he didn't want to take anything away from the offense. He thought they would be a good enough offense, but that, you know, this wasn't going to be up there with the elite teams that spend crazy money on attackers and whatnot. And I believed that to be accurate. I mean, you look at the Crew historically, you know, the Caleb Porter, Greg Berhalter era, which I think is kind of the modern era of this team. And they've been a good attacking team. They've always had forwards who score. They've had the Higuain. They've had obviously what Zelrayan has done. But they haven't been, you know, you look at the goals for numbers, the expected goals, it's never been that great. But they still found a way more often than not in that era to be successful. I don't know if they can keep this up. You know, Saturday looked a lot less offensively sound just because it was kind of the second half.
Yeah.
But, man, I mean, this team is, I don't know if Caleb was pulling our leg and he was just seeing it. Because we didn't see it in the preseason games. I mean, the ones that we saw.
No,
now, they did.
No.
I think they played Inter-Miami in an early preseason game and won like 4-5-0 that was just a scrimmage.
Anybody even Caleb said about that match, it was not the challenge he wanted.
Right.
For
his team.
Inter-Miami's not a challenge like for anyone except for maybe Cincinnati.
Well, but then they played him in the Carolina Challenge Cup and it was much more difficult
with a different formation. They went with the three and the they did a whole different thing then. Yeah,
but just your guys and you can both touch on this and Sam you as well. Just what have you seen that has kind of made this offense maybe be better than we thought it was going to be?
Oh,
got something?
I think it's being healthy. You started the same roster 3 weeks in a row, and you started off against some pretty poor teams.
That probably helps.
A team that it definitely helps, but you have a side that has played together now for a few years. I mean, you still have the core of the MLS Cup winning team here. You have Lucas coming out of a tear at the end of 2021. I think it's a product of that. You have Artur coming back. You have a lot of emotion in that home opener with a lot of players who return from injury. And I think that propels the team to play better. That's part of it. But I think that's just maybe potential finally being reached. Maybe you have a Yeboah and Etienne playing like that, and we haven't had winger play like that. But then you look further back, and fullbacks last year were a mess, and we had so many different players, or they had so many different players. I'm not on the team; they don't pay me. They have a lot of different players in 2021.
Yet.
Probably not ever. Although my name is twice on the seating roster in the media area, so they do give me two seats.
I never
Watch
got
out,
two
everybody.
Seats.
Do you get twice as much food?
I'm usually too busy to get. I missed the halftime cream puffs, which I was really mad about. We have. Oh, sorry, Sam.
No.
I'm not gonna talk about it.
No. We get halftime cream puffs.
Oh, okay,
downstairs.
Good. Oh, it was. Yeah. I thought it was a what? Like, wait, we don't get those.
I was so annoyed because I had to stop going to games and covering them late last season because of COVID, and the first game was against Seattle, and I just saw John Champion feed Taylor Twellman that cream puff. I got the pictures from
please
Pat.
Please don't remind me.
And I'm like, I am so annoyed I'm not there right now having a cream puff.
I might make it worse because now they're doing these banana chocolate cream puffs.
Oh, yeah.
That
with
are
a little chocolate
so good.
Drizzle on the top.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Anyway. The
Ori hates us right
now. I did think about it halftime just popping up to the press box. I haven't even got my credential yet, so I would have had to, like, sweet talk my way up there, but
it's
I did
red.
Sweet talk for the, some sweets.
Our credentials are red.
That's weird, but
red.
Whatever.
They're
were
red.
I feel like they were red a few years ago. People don't care about this. We can talk about this after.
But the offense, I think they're just meeting expectations. And you talk about Porter in that interview preseason. The ironic thing is Etienne was right before him in that press conference.
Yes,
and Etienne said, "If we're firing, we're scoring 3 or 4 goals a match." He said that, and then 5 minutes later, Porter's like, "Oh no, this is going to be a gritty team." And then you mentioned earlier, Ori, like Caleb's like, "Oh, we could have scored 4 or 5." At the 4-0 victory in the first match, Caleb Porter went in the press conference and said, "We should have scored more." So even now, like, I think it's politics. My answer to the ultimate question, past cream puffs credentials, is I think that part of it is politics. I think part of it is kind of lowering expectations. And he's mentioned a few times about salary. He mentioned again last week that Toronto has the highest roster pay in the league. So he keeps talking about pay. Maybe this is a sign of, hey, what else can I get?
Well, it's not like San Jose's head coach, who was clearly speaking before they played the Crew. He made a comment about Houston signing Herrera and, you know, basically said it must be nice to have a owner that pays for quality players.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think Brett Hillbrand put that one out on Twitter. And
where's Lucas Elrion, Dongton Agby are not quality buys?
No, like, no. He was specifically talking about his team. Like, the fact that San Jose doesn't spend any money, which is true. But I wonder, to your point, Thomas, do you think Caleb said that preseason just to motivate his guys a little bit? I mean, like, you know, clearly he knows the attacking ability. And to the point we made earlier, these haven't been the biggest challenges defensively. But just, you know, you put that out there. It's obviously something that caught on social media, and fans saw that and whatnot. So, like, now you have guys in practice like, okay, well, you know, we can score goals. Like, we can – just because we're not getting paid what – you know, everyone's not getting paid what Lucas is getting paid doesn't mean the Miguel Berrys, the Derek Etiennes, even the Giassi Zardes of the world can't score. And I don't know –
Jonathan Mensah that almost scored, like, what, twice so far this
year? Did, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, if that was a psychology play by Caleb. He's certainly not a guy that would shy away from doing something like that.
I feel like Caleb is more of the under-promise, over-deliver type of guy.
Yeah.
Not maybe the I'm trying to motivate my guys, at least in this
that
particular thing. So if that was truly his intention to under-promise and over-deliver, then he is doing one hell of a job.
Etienne said after the match on Saturday that he mentioned that, oh, all of you guys are saying that we weren't scoring, so we were motivated. Maybe he's saying that just because you have media there and you want to kind of like we're reporting on what was happening. But to the point that you were making, that could be part of the motivation for him. Maybe his motivation is seeing, oh, we've only scored 4 winger goals from the run of play in all 2021. Maybe we did. I repeated that stat many times in the offseason.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of the motivation. I'm not saying he's reading everything that we're writing.
No,
but hearing about it, people are talking about it. It's not just on Master Report, but it's in the Twitter sphere. Everyone was talking about it. I think that's a piece of
when
it.
When I imagine they were aware, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they knew that those guys weren't scoring last year. And, I mean, last year's tough to compare to, as you mentioned earlier, with the injuries and everything. But even 2020, I mean, and again, that was a COVID year, so it was different, but it wasn't like they were a high-scoring team. You know, they...
Defense.
Yeah, and I do think that this team ultimately will hang its hat on getting shutouts, holding a team to a goal. Now, if you can also score 3 or 4, especially when you're playing bad teams,
helps.
You know, I mean, no one in MLS, maybe LAFC a few years ago. There have been a few teams that have been really elite offensively. Mm-hmm. Seattle's had a couple teams that have been really good. Obviously, back in the old days of MLS when things were very different. But, you know, I think most of the good teams score goals for sure, but can play good defense. And the biggest thing, and I think this team did that on Saturday, take the sting out of the game. And I think that's like such an underappreciated part of being a good team is they kept attacking and but there were times when they just kept the ball, knocked it around the back, Nagby held it, played it to Artur. You know, there were just moments where it was like, all right, let's take a few minutes, let's catch our breath. And I thought that's what they didn't do in San Jose.
No.
And, you know, I mean, you're up two goals, maybe you think you're fine, you don't need to do that. Maybe it was something that came up, but, you know, the ability to do that helps you be able to grind out wins, or, you know, if you're up 3-1, next time hold on to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's been good stuff from the Crew offensively. Yeah. They need to keep it up, but you can't keep it up like this. It's impossible.
Yeah, I don't think
unless you're Leeds in the championship in the Marcelo Bielsa era.
Or you're playing Leeds defense this year.
Or you're playing Leeds defense this year and can score 9 goals against them. So
do teams adjust, though? Because it's early in the season. They saw that 3 in the bag, maybe just because Toronto hadn't played it and Porter was thrown off because they weren't preparing for it. But how will the Crew adjust 4 or 5 matches into the season, a few more matches where teams are changing things up and maybe they're putting more in the back? Maybe they're putting more.
Well, and they're going to get a test here on the road against
right, it's huge.
What we think is a good, what seems to be a good team, who yesterday, played against a goalie that was one playing out of his mind, mm-hmm. But also missed a or didn't miss had a penalty kick get saved, and then they end up losing the game 1-0 against Minnesota. So this
Sam is talking about the Red Bulls, just for clarity's sake,
right? Well, I said they're going up against the team.
Yeah, I don't know. Not everyone is dialed in on the schedule.
and I'm actually looking ahead because we mentioned those first 3 games for the Crew weren't exactly the toughest games in the world. Vancouver, San Jose, Toronto, you would say, are sort of below average teams.
Well, mm-hmm. you were kind of there was some expectation that Toronto might be better this year than they
right.
were last year.
And
so far that
well.
Hasn't been the case.
Right, but Toronto played well. But the schedule coming up is hard. Red Bulls, Nashville, Philly, Orlando.
Nashville also lost this weekend.
Even still, Nashville's a great defensive organized team. Yeah. Kansas City's good. DC
Kansas City also lost this weekend.
Everybody in MLS loses, except for the Crew, apparently.
And LAFC.
And LAFC.
And the Crew play LAFC on May 21st.
There's 7 teams that are still undefeated.
Yeah. 7?
Yeah.
That many?
Yeah. Yes.
Let's see. Crew, Philly, Chicago with 2 ties.
LA.
LAFC, RSL, of course. Portland
and
Minnesota.
Yeah.
And then how many teams have no points? Montreal and Charlotte, that's it.
That's going to be a good wooden spoon battle, I think, between Charlotte's going to – I think Montreal will bounce back.
Because FC Cincinnati's off the schneid.
It's
Cincy
early.
Cincy will get the spoon. Unless Charlotte is the worst expansion team ever.
They scored 1 goal in their 3 matches so far. Charlotte is
– And it wasn't a great goal. I mean, it was a fine goal on Sunday. They play Sunday.
Did they make a shirt for
Atlanta.
It? Did they make a shirt for the goal?
They should make
I don't
a
know.
Shirt for the
we
goal.
Should see. We'll see.
Sam, you brought up Red Bulls. Their team, that 2 out of their 3 games, they've played 3 in the back, 5 in the back, whatever you want to call it. And that's something that, you know, wasn't just Saturday. The Crew have had some issues with that. You know, it came up a number of times last year. Jordan mm-hmm. Angeli was really big on asking about that, and rightfully so. They struggled playing, you know, 3 or 5, however you want to look at it. And obviously the first half against Toronto, granted it was a surprise, but struggled with that. So it'll certainly be interesting. Sam, you mentioned the Red Bulls lost this weekend, but had 2 wins before then, San Jose and Toronto. They beat San Jose 3-1. The Crew obviously were up 3-1, got a 3-3 draw. Now that game, San Jose was actually in it. I think that was probably a more comparable game to what the Crew did. Mm-hmm. They just didn't give up 2 set-piece goals late. And San Jose had some chances in that one. And then the Toronto game, they just dominated Toronto completely. So, you know, but yeah, each game's different. I don't think you can take like-for-like opponents and compare. But I do think this is going to be the biggest challenge for the Crew.
Mm-hmm.
Red Bulls obviously have been good at home. They're usually good against the Crew with the way they play and the pressing and all that, which will come up a lot this week, I'm sure. But
except in MLS Cup.
Well, yeah, that was a very different Red Bulls team, though, if you're talking 2008.
Is anyone from that 2008 team still playing professional soccer right now?
I doubt it. You mean either team?
Not for either team.
Yeah,
not
I don't
for
think
either
so.
Team. No, Juan Pablo Angel's not kicking it around somewhere.
He was still like 34 at the time.
Juan Pablo Angel's been 34
his entire career.
His hair,
though, was like 22.
His hair was immaculate.
He was 34 when he was at Aston Villa.
Immaculate. I'm
trying to think if anyone, like, if there are young players on that team. I don't think so. Like, that, I mean, we're 13 years removed. Is that what it is? I don't know. I'm bad at that.
Yeah. 2008 was so long ago.
That's yeah,
so
were you even alive then?
Shut up. I was alive in 2008. I watched the Crew win MLS Cup in 2008.
Me too. I was there.
We know you were there. We saw you on TV screaming at that camera.
I have the pictures to prove it.
I do too.
He actually had hair back then too.
It's the same hair. I literally actually, because this was the first Crew game I'd gone to in quite some time where I wore a jersey, I walked. Oh no, this was actually last week before the away game. I walked outside and one of my friends was like, "You're wearing the same thing you wore in MLS Cup." And I pulled up a picture and I look the same. It's very, I have not changed. For a number of reasons. But,
and the Red Bulls haven't changed either with that high-pressing style that they
always
have.
Well, they weren't high-pressing then. I mean, they were like, they were just a soccer team. You know, like Chris Leach.
They were just a soccer team.
I mean, they just played,
great,
you know.
Great description.
I mean, 2008 MLS, like, there weren't a lot of tactical geniuses in that league, you know. Ziggy was
your best player.
So. Yeah. I mean, Ziggy had some things. Bruce Arena had some things. But you didn't have to do much. You just had to be better.
Yeah. And the Crew... Pep wasn't revolutionizing the game at that point the way he was trying to do before, so, you know.
But this Red Bulls team will be tactical, will be pressing, you know. It's a different group than the really good Red Bulls teams that were Supporter Shield contenders but could never get over the hump with MLS Cup. I mean, you look at the roster, there's not a lot of big names. They used to be signing guys left and right. I think Aaron Long's probably the most well-recognized name on that team just because of their, you know, his national team affiliation. But still a good team. I like what they do up top with Kamala. I think he's an interesting player. We talked earlier about this, the center backs, specifically Milos. I think this will be a real good test. You know, this is a guy that you're going to have to really pay attention to.
Yeah.
I think he already has a couple goals this year. Or you're usually...
No, he only has assists.
Does he?
I only know that because
who,
they were...
Kamala?
Yeah. Does he?
He has no goals or no assists. I thought he scored...
One goal. Lewis Morgan's their top scorer with three, and then...
Okay.
Morgan,
top average FOP mob rating is Frankie
well,
Amaya.
They were talking about it during the broadcast yesterday.
Morgan had all three of his goals against Toronto.
That was the Toronto hat trick, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think this, you know, this is a typical going to the Red Bulls type of game. Yeah, like I said, the names may be different, but, you know, it's certainly will not be easy.
One of those days we're going to make it back to Red Bull Arena. We were there
in glorious Harrison, New Jersey.
I've never been to Red Bull Arena. I've been to Yankee Stadium for a game.
It is a. I would definitely recommend if you have a chance to go to Red Bull Arena. It is a fantastic venue.
I would drive up there this weekend, but there's that March Madness thing I have to deal with.
Oh yeah, you're going to Pittsburgh.
I'm not going to that.
Okay.
That's a whole different thing. Anyway, on the Crew. Yeah, so I guess we should do some picks for. Unless we have anything else, was there anything notable around the league this week?
Snow.
Yeah.
Snow. Carles Hill was really pissed that it snowed in New England.
Like, and they played with the orange ball.
Justin Merrim seemed to love it.
Yeah, RSL came really back happy, and beat New England. What else was going on in the league? Yeah. I see Dallas beat Nashville. I mean,
Austin
didn't score five goals. Atlanta got a last.
I knew that was
going to
end at some point, right?
Right.
No, you thought Austin is
FC Cincinnati won.
We
against
all
Orlando
know Austin
on
FC.
The
Verde. All right. Are a perennial
don't
MLS powerhouse. I will do that, Thomas. They score five goals a game every week.
Also, Miami.
I think I saw this on Twitter somewhere, but one of the Austin FC fans. Said something about refereeing, and he said it's obviously which green they preferred. Here's the thing. Portland wore their traditional green. Austin wore their mint green.
This is
their mint,
like,
T-shirt with a
yeah.
Why do they
on
have
it?
Two
and it's
green,
like,
kits?
And it's
that,
like,
didn't make any
but
sense.
But why?
Why didn't Portland wear the rose jerseys that are dope?
Who knows? But I saw that. I was like, how did the referees even allow that? That's a bit weird.
Ridiculous.
That's odd. Oh, speaking of uniforms, can we just take a moment to appreciate the yellow, black, yellow?
That was a sweet combo.
I didn't even.
They look like the Iowa Hawkeyes out there.
I knew the Pittsburgh Steelers. I knew going in.
I'm not liking any of these comparisons.
No,
you're making me dislike them. Actually.
Charleston Battery.
I
feel a little better now.
I knew going in that they were going to wear this combination, thanks to the Massive Report Twitter account. But Thomas? Until I got there and saw it on the field again, like, it was like, oh, yeah, this is – and actually, we took – so the Manchester United bar we go to, we have a guy who's from Manchester who is in – has been here, and he'd never been to a crew game before, so he came with us on Saturday. Really enjoyed it. Obviously – you know, the crowd wasn't as big, but he was very
still
understanding.
Loud.
Of that.
Yeah, really it was a good very loud. Crowd on Saturday. Yeah,
he really enjoyed it. But one of the things he commented on was the color combination. And he said he'd watched some crew highlights, like, to prepare himself. He knew some names. He knew Zellerion. He knew Nagby, but he hadn't seen obviously the black gold black, or the black gold black
gold,
gold.
Black gold.
Yeah, yeah, and so he mentioned that was one of the things he brought up. Was
yeah, people
that he
were
thought that looked
gushing sharp. Over the uniform combo. Yes, the logo's still on the jersey, but that uniform combo was so good. It was nice to see it back.
It was, and it was. I don't think I've ever seen it at other teams. Have you seen other teams when they have the logo on the shorts? They also have the stars.
So
that is
the
a
crew
great question.
have the logo and they have the stars on the shorts. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
That's a power move right there. That's a power move. Like, hey, we'll put the stars on our shorts too because we're winners, man.
So my only recollection of black, yellow is always either Open Cup or Champions League.
Right.
Mm. So seeing it done in league play,
yep.
And it actually, when they got on there, it looked really good.
And
I think that should be like just alternate the shorts, but also always wear that.
Yeah, full credit to the front office and family and probably Ty had something to do with it, too, from a fan liaison standpoint. And just in general, the fact that they got the gold jerseys and they got those black shorts with them. Credit to that. I would like the gray jerseys gone, though.
Do you wanna hear a piece of news that might be interesting?
Yes.
Oh?
According to Tom Bogart of MLSsoccer.com, the Columbus Crew are open to trading U.S. national team forward Giassi Zardes.
Gas. Did he just report that?
Literally 3 minutes ago.
Oh, 3 minutes ago. Breaking news.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I buy that entirely. I think maybe the crew would listen to offers.
In some sense, there is some logic to it because he's taking a DP slot, right?
No, I don't believe so. Okay. I know it says that on the, well, in Tom's article, it says it does. So the MLS site has been wrong about designated players for quite a long time. Here's my thing, and we don't have to, you know, we've already gone pretty long here, so we don't have to go long on this, but I do think it's worth bringing up since it's being discussed. And we actually have a story in the admin about why this shouldn't happen that I've been waiting to publish. But
hey,
time is
like
now.
A good time.
Time is now.
yes, we'll have to do some editing. But I think if you trade, unless Giassi wants out, which I can't imagine, I think if, and we talked about this a little last week, but you go from having two potential starters to Miguel Berry, who's had probably, I don't know, not even 15 good MLS games. I mean, you're hoping he plays well, but you don't know this for sure.
It's a game.
And Eric Hurtado as your forwards. And we talked about how good the offense has been, and you know, you only have two goals from forwards.
Yeah.
But if that, you know, if Derek Etienne stops scoring and, you know, Lucas comes back to earth even just a little bit, and then you're relying on a, for all intents and purposes, a second year forward to, you know, push this team to an MLS Cup, I think you're asking for trouble there, and you know,
the only
question is, what are you going to get for him?
Right. Well, but
what
not,
are you going to get?
But not like just that. I would say the only way you make that move is if you are already eyeing somebody and somewhat in progress for something in the summer window. Because otherwise, that is not a really smart move.
It's an interesting development.
It's not even a good money move,
right?
Because it's not really. Like, it's costing you, but it's not costing you that much to bring in a guy off the bench who's a national team player who, even if he doesn't score, he's changing the coverage around that middle attacking mid and front line that allows for somebody like Zellerion to score, like Derek Etienne to score, like Yayuba eventually to score.
It's a very interesting development, and, you know,
or Luis Diaz to shank it.
I mean, Jossie hasn't started all season. Who knows if he starts on Sunday? When he gets that first start for the crew, we don't know. He could have a situation where he does want to leave Columbus and he might need to go to California or something and be closer to to home potentially. Who knows? But
well, the one thing I guess I could see for Giassi pushing for a trade is there is that World Cup sitting out at the end of this season.
Yeah,
and so if he knows, you know, and I said this last week and I've said it multiple times, I feel like by the end of the season, assuming he stays on the roster, that Giassi will contribute more than Miguel. But if he knows that Caleb is leaning way further than I think towards Miguel Berry, and he also wants to be on that World Cup team and realizes coming off the bench for the Crew probably isn't going to get him there when he's already kind of an iffy guy to make the roster anyway, you know, maybe that's something that would be a pushing point.
There's three forward spots on Berhalter's roster to go to Qatar, assuming they qualify. He wants one of those spots. So if he wants to get regular minutes to prove that and have really a dream be realized, would be the biggest moment of his career, then that's fair. So we have to see.
Yeah. All right. Let's unless we have anything else on Giassi here, let's do picks for the Red Bull game. Ori, you want to kick us
first
off? You want to do Bart's pick first?
I'll do Bart's pick. All right. 6-0 Crew. Miguel scores 4 goals. Giassi comes off the bench, scores 1. Gets traded to LAFC. No, I'm kidding.
And then Josh
Williams.
I was about to say.
Bicycle kick.
Bicycle. No, not a bicycle kick. A scissor kick while bicycling. So
scorpion kick.
And then I'll do Alex's pick. Crew will win 2-0.
Well, Alex isn't even a part of the podcast.
Throw the jackhammer in the Scioto River. Okay.
I love the jackhammer.
My actual prediction, I'm going to say on the road, I think the Crew lose. I think they lose 1-0. I think it's going to be a tough game on the road. I think they come back down to earth a little bit offensively. I think the Red Bulls play them well. I think New York wins 1-0.
Sam?
Brian
would just disown you here or whatever.
I miss Brian.
I don't
have
that.
He wasn't here.
Yeah, New York has played well. Even yesterday, even in the loss, they played well yesterday. But missing that penalty really kind of, it feels like it kind of knocked them out of the game mentally. But I'm going to say the defense still holds up. It bends, but it doesn't break. And this is a 1-1 game.
Thomas?
I agree with the 1-1. That's where I was going to go with it too, Sam. I think that this match feels a lot like that 2020 return from MLS's back. We were looking really well, and they go to New York and kind of get manhandled pretty much. I think that this team is going to break through and at least score a goal. But I'm interested to see how well that defense holds up to your point, Pat, about Milos and our set piece is going to be fixed because it's a contender.
Yeah, if they play the way they played the second half,
yeah,
you know, you might
contest.
Have something.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's hard to tell if that's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about this on the way over here. Usually I don't give a lot of thought to these picks until later in the week. But I did stick with the same scoreline last week from here. And
one of only three predictors who had the right scoreline and result.
Was it me?
You weren't in the article.
Well,
you never answered
my email, I wasn't in the article.
Sam.
Sorry. I thought we were talking about the podcast because I think I predicted.
They're different Massive Report worlds.
Yeah, right.
This is the writing world.
Fine.
I will say that the Crew were able to score, but I do think they lose. I don't know. I've never felt good about them going to Red Bull Arena. Mm. And I'm still on the thing where, like, prove it to me on the road. Like, you've had one chance. I was pretty impressed with some of that game, but I need to see it before I'm picking them. So I'm going to go 2-1 Red Bull.
I'm going to go out of left field just because I saw it live and in person. Rich Bolshin comes out of the bench, out of the stands and comes in the 90th minute to score the tying goal like he did in 2010, I think it was. That we were in the
Red Bull. Sounds about right.
This is the time of the year. You have to make the out-of-the-box predictions. It's March Madness. You're trying to get your bracket all right, get those upsets.
Yeah.
And I'm saying Loyola beats Ohio State, too.
Is that an upset?
Yeah, no, it's not an upset. It's not an upset.
I think it's a pick. It's down to a pick 'em. Like they were, Loyola was. People don't care about this.
Go
anyway. Thank you all for tuning in again. Like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Whatever platform you're listening this on. Ori, thanks for coming out. It's been good to see you.
Yeah,
it's been too long.
It's fun to be back.
People missed hearing your voice and your opinions.
I don't know about that. I was kind of annoying on the podcast for 2 years. So,
well, I mean, you stuck around for 2 years. So,
yeah.
I'm glad you're doing good things, though, Thomas. thank you for making the trek down here.
Thanks for having me to the palace that is Saucy Brewer.
Yeah, right. We love Saucy Brew Works.
On 3rd and the other street name.
3rd Michigan.
Michigan Avenue, yes.
3rd in that state of
I Florida. Live in Blacklick, so I don't know much about these downtown places.
Blacklick? Man, that's far.
It sure is.
Sam, thanks for doing more talking this week. I know that's not your favorite thing. And, yeah, again, thanks everyone listening. Thanks for Saucy. We've already said the address a number of times. We'll be back next week. We'll talk the crew, Red Bulls, probably another Lucas Zelarayán Team of the Week on there.
That's kind of how that goes right now.